What's up, guys? This is the Talking the Draft podcast. I'm your host, Connor Lives. You're joined by my hosts today, Dalton Miller and Cole Patterson. We're all three back at it. As Dalton has returned from vacation, we fired RJ, and me and Cole are still here like we have been. So we're excited. I said Talking the Draft. This will probably be the last Talking the Draft episode as we'll kind of start transitioning back into Talking the Star. But we're going to talk some more draft today, so we'll stick with that. But how you fellas doing? I know, Dalton, you just got back from the Caribbean. How was that?
It was fantastic. I didn't have
Are you at deal. Aruba?
Yeah, Aruba. Yep. Didn't have to deal with my phone really at all. It was a blessing, for sure. It was a blessing.
You get time to, you know, unwind and everything after the draft. Unplug and everything.
It was a great time to rewind, and then I came back here, and at 10:30 last night, we found fleas on the dog.
Oh, man.
So that was not fun.
Where was the dog at?
Yeah.
I mean, the dog was at our house when we found him, but
no. Like,
where it was with a friend. I mean, I'm not blaming it on them because I don't know where exactly she got him. I mean, she could have had him before that. She could have got him somehow at home, but I mean, there was a lot of them there, so I don't think she got him at home. But like, I don't know. Like, man, I'm not here to assign blame for anything. So.
Yeah, we are.
I'm not. We just deal. We just turn the house over, dude. I graduate on Friday, so my parents are coming to town tomorrow.
Exciting.
It threw a huge wrench. And I was not in the movie Dodgeball, so I couldn't dodge it.
Did you have Orkin come out and just absolutely dust the house with that stuff?
Nah. So we got our own set. Like we cleaned top to bottom. And then we're gonna treat tonight. And then they're going to come in next Wednesday and treat the entire house. Bomb it. They're going to bomb the house.
Bomb it.
Yeah. I had some important business to do tomorrow, so I couldn't.
Well, speaking of bombing it, the Cowboys totally bombed the 2020. No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't that bad. We're going to talk about it. We kind of went, Dalton, we went on, you weren't with us, but we went on with RJ last week and we gave grades. And I think we finished up with – I think we both said that if the Nashawn Wright pick didn't exist, that we would say it's a B+. But since it is – wait, what is that?
Two picks. The Nashawn Wright pick and the Josh Ball pick are the two that I don't like.
Well, right, and we kind of talked about why we don't like the Josh Ball pick, I think, from a talent perspective. And again, like I was pretty – I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Oh, great. Great value from a talent perspective.
See, I don't disagree, but I don't think he's some stud either.
Yeah, like,
there's inconsistencies on tape with him as well.
No, for sure.
We were talking about with RJ, there's some other talented guys, equally if not more talented guys, still on the board, which makes the pick even more of a head-scratcher.
That I will not disagree with you with, but there's one absolute disqual. And listen, if a team wants to take a chance on a guy like this, I can't stop them. If I were coaching or GMing a football team, he would not be on my team. Listen, I understand you want to talk about growth and all of that. I mean, he didn't answer questions the way that I would have wanted him to when Hellman asked him about it. I didn't think that he gave a very good answer. And then the PR team got with him immediately afterwards before the actual interview with the media scrum, and he gave better answers. But
I think it's not my dude. I think his answers in that were worse than the answer he gave to Hellman.
None of it was great.
Right. But like, I honestly thought, like, because you have to assume that somebody talked to him after the call right after he was drafted. It was like, hey, can't do that. And then he went on to the entire media call and was like, yeah, you just got to be careful who you hang around. And I was like, what? I was like, hold on. You went from, yeah, we've moved on, to this has nothing to do with me. It's about who I kept in my friend circle. And it's like, dude. Come on. Like honestly, I stopped kind of blaming him at that point. I was like, whoever is telling you what to say is just as lost as you are at this point.
Digging in a deeper hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know, and this is getting off the topic of him because I really don't want to talk about him all that much. But with the Nashawn Wright pick, like, I don't want to necessarily poo-poo on it because it doesn't, like, do a whole lot of good to do that. But I think the I think having to reach on the tape that we saw of him and be like, well, he might, I don't know. There were a couple good reps in there, and it's just like
the two games that everybody has.
it's not there to me. And yeah, that's okay. Like, sometimes you don't pick the guys that I like, and that's fine.
Right.
There were two guys that were picked immediately afterwards that were much better players in my opinion.
Literally, right after.
That's the way that these things go sometimes. You don't run the draft. And I have a lot of trust, for the most part, in Will McClay and those guys, Chris Hall and them. So I can't poo-poo on it too much. I ended up, because I wrote about him for Pro Football Network, and I gave him a C-plus overall. And the way that I look at it, especially once we got to talk to Dan Quinn and see what they're going to do defensively, especially with their defensive fronts mixing it up, the Osa pick and the Golston pick made a lot more sense in that instance. And honestly, for me, I think that it made the Parsons pick make even more sense as well, on top of also grabbing Jabril Cox in round four as well. And that might have been a BPA, but it still, you know, really puts a ton of guys in your linebacker room. But it allows you to play those guys situationally, which I think is good. So the way that I looked at it, when you look at it from a pick-by-pick standpoint, it's like, man, like, there's a lot of picks in there that I did not like very much. And then you look at it in its totality, and it's like, man, like, they got some guys that I'm pretty excited about.
That's probably the best way I could describe it, too, with kind of what we talked about with RJ last week, is it was like, you know, did I love the Michael Parsons pick? No, but I didn't hate it. Did I love the Kelvin Joseph pick? No, but I liked it. And then, like, for me, like, you got into that third round, and I was like, man, I would have taken, you know, 7, 8, 9 different players over Osa. Like, they were reaches, but when you – if you're not going by, like, what my board says compared to where they were drafted, like, you still can acknowledge that they picked good players. Like, Chauncey Golston I had as, like, a 6th-round player. I liked him. It's just like, I don't see where he's ever going to be a great pass rusher. Like, he's not athletic enough from a change of direction standpoint and, like, quick-footed standpoint to where he'll ever do a ton in the back. Like, he'll be disruptive, but he's not going to finish plays in the backfield. So for me, it was like, you know, Golston was my two pick. Like, I didn't like the Josh Ball pick because of all the other things, but, like, my biggest two, like, reaches were Wright and Golston, because I thought you could have gotten Golston in the 5th round. So, like, just way too early for me at 84 to take that player. But, again, like, you go back and you watch his tape, like, even before the tape, like, when you talk about him, we talk about him, we write about him, like, good player. Like, out of Iowa, he's the Iowa defensive lineman, A.J. Epinesa, like, big, strong guy who's going to hold the point of attack, who's going to, you know, be disruptive against the run. It's just, like, how much of a pass rush is he ever going to offer? And that's kind of what holds you back from being, like, super excited about Golston. But when you see that you're going to see more, you know, 3-4 or odd fronts, I'll say that, because we don't know that it's always going to be 3-4, but it might be, you know, those guys playing that 4-eye or 4-5 technique. You can understand the Golston pick. You can understand the Osa pick a little bit more. Even, like you said, just going back to it, like, I can't make sense of the Nashawn Wright pick. Like, even after going back and watching his film with, like, the little bit of bias that we all have once guys are drafted, it's like, nothing about this guy's tape says he's a day two pick. Like, nothing about his athleticism says he's a day two pick. Like, I just can't make sense of that one.
Were they that worried that some other team after them was going to grab him in that 3rd round? Because, like, it just doesn't make sense if they wanted, like, a tall corner, a big corner. If these two was sitting right there, like,
they're probably like, these terrible teams behind us who draft terribly are probably gonna take this guy.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, Detroit doesn't pick good corners, do they?
Maybe they're gonna take our guy.
Exactly, but this is weird because, like, I forgot who, maybe Masha, who said that he heard that they're debating between him and Jabril Cox at 99. And they went with Jabril, right? Were they that worried Wright was going to be taken within those next picks that they had to grab him there? Like, what was the just trying to think what their thought process was with that. Because
yeah, I don't have one. Because like even guys who do a lot more work than we do, like the Dane Brugler's seventh round PFA grade, like Lance Zierlein's seventh round PFA grade. Yeah. So it's not like a Gregory Russo thing where like some people see him as like a top 30 talent and then some people are like, yeah, he's a top 100 guy. It's like mixed, barely.
Like,
you have guys out there who are like, oh, this guy, you know, he could go back into first round or early day two. Mm-hmm. No, like nobody was saying that.
And they almost, like, they're honestly really lucky that Cox lasted to 115 as well. So they decided to take the worst player there. And I said, praise God, they got both.
But that's what. When we were on with RJ, that's the biggest thing for me is it's like the process. The process is still jacked to a certain extent because when they admitted that Jabril Cox was a second round grade player for him, which means they probably took Osa, Chauncey, and Wright over top of him. That's where I'm just like, guys, what are we doing here, man? Like your defense, like, and I get it.
Nah,
like,
man, they had a second round grade on all of them.
There's
top 50 grade. I'm right.
But dude, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but I understand it to a certain extent with you take a linebacker with 10. So the value of that position drops a little bit, but this team is so bad on defense that it shouldn't matter. Like, you know, like I get it. Like if you take like, say you would have drafted Kyle Pitts at 10. Like I get it. If like, Pat Freiermuth falls to you at 84 and you're like, we're just not going to do that. Even though he might be best player available, but this defense is so bad that it's not like you can be like, we got a linebacker. Because legitimately, you have one talented linebacker, one guy who has the talent that can't stay healthy and has been inconsistent when he has been, and the other guy who can't play football at a high level anymore because his knee doesn't work. So it's like... Yeah. You don't have talent on defense, and you don't think you have talent at linebacker. So it's just I don't know. But I wanted to kind of talk, kind of transition into how the draft picks, the UDFAs, will translate into camp. We're getting ready to start up with OTAs, mini camp, training camps right around the corner. So I kind of want to look ahead, talk about some of these guys, like maybe position, like will Simi Fehoko push Cedric Wilson, Noah Brown? Will Adighi Zuwa put Tristan Hill or Neville Gallimore in a situation where they're expandable? Like, I want to go through some of those situations where some of these guys who were drafted this year or maybe a UDFA is going to have a position battle or really push to get playing time or a roster spot. I mean, I think with Parsons, it's safe to say he's going to get on the field some way or the other, whether it's inside linebacker, outside linebacker, DPR. Like, he's going to get on the field. But I'd like to talk about Kelvin Joseph, like going into camp, where do we think he kind of starts at on this depth chart and priority list for this secondary?
CB1.
One or two?
One.
You think so?
Yeah. Entering training camp?
Entering training camp.
I was like, holy crap.
Entering training camp, he's probably CB4. They probably have Anthony Brown.
Outside and Jordan Lewis inside?
Probably. It's probably how they do it. So he's technically CB3 because he's going to be playing on the outside. Although he has a skill set to play on the inside. Yeah. I mean, it's just I would rather have Brown on the inside and Joseph on the outside personally. But that's mostly because I don't love Brown on the outside.
I don't love Brown at all, but I definitely think he's better on the inside than he is the outside. But so just staying on, not going to go one by one, but like staying on that position with Nashawn Wright, Cole, where do you kind of see – that's what was tough for me because you take that guy high and then I'm like I mean, he's got to make the team as a top 100 pick.
Yeah, he has to.
But like where does he fall into place?
Yeah, that's what makes it hard, like as you mentioned, because they spend a top 100 pick, third round pick. It's not like they spend a fifth round selection, and if you cut them, it's not the end. You don't want to cut your fifth round picks, but if you have to, it's not the worst thing ever. You get away with it. But third round makes me think that there's, I mean, I think we all agree that he's the guy that's a developmental prospect. Maybe in a couple years, maybe a year or two, he turns out to be what they want him to be long term. But yeah, his rookie year is gonna be really interesting to track. Like, do they try to push him into like a big role early? Like, obviously, not a starting role or anything like that, but did they give him a lot of snaps early on, or did they kind of just let him take a redshirt year, so to speak, and let him learn behind the guys that's in front of them. But I mean, it's not like they're deep at corner either. So I mean,
let him learn behind Anthony Brown and Jordan Lewis. And
I mean, I just don't know what you do.
Yeah. I mean, that's the bad thing is it's like you have, you know, like right now you have Trayvon Diggs, Kelvin Joseph, Jordan Lewis, Anthony Brown, CJ Goodwin, kind of is your five corners. And then you have other guys as well. I mean, Reggie Robinson, who's a guy who they moved back to corner after playing at safety all last year, who's supposed to be
back. I think he's back
safety.
At safety, yeah.
Right. But, like, I mean, I guess I was just saying it hasn't been made official yet. So it's like they're moving that guy around a ton. Like, they still have Rashard Robinson on the roster, who played a lot last year, who just recently got suspended. So, like, by no means are they absolutely loaded at corner, but they have a lot of bodies there and a lot of bodies who've played a lot recently. Who do you think? For me, like if Nashawn Wright puts CJ Goodwin on the street, like I'll be upset with that because of how good Goodwin is at special teams. Like, where do you guys think? Like, where does Nashawn Wright make? Who does he push off the roster? Do they keep seven corners?
No, I mean I don't think so. But you also have to think about Maurice Kanade as well.
Right, like that's another player.
It's a difficult conversation to have. They might end up cutting a top 100 guy. I mean, I don't think that they will, but I mean, they could. I mean, who else is expendable here? I mean, you're looking at it. Joseph is a lock. Diggs is a lock. Lewis is a lock. Brown's a lock. And then you have
Goodwin, special teams ace.
Yeah. Kanade and Wright. Like, you have those three.
Yeah,
it's either
you're cutting a Maurice Kanade type of player who a lot of people were excited about coming into last year from free agency because of the versatility he offers. And, you know, he's a free agent that they obviously liked. So you're either moving on from a guy like that, who I think the front office was excited about and that the coaching staff was excited about, or moving on from a guy who's literally one of your best special teams players. So that's what's kind of confusing to me, but let's move on to Osa and Chauncey. So Odigizuwa is kind of the and again, like I got into some arguments with people on Twitter because I didn't love that pick, but it's not because of the player. It's because I feel like you have two to three other players already on your roster who are kind of similar to him in similar ways from a body type position standpoint. What are your thoughts on Osa and what he's going to do in Dallas? Like, do you think he's going to – I mean, I know he's going to be a three technique who can play some of that five or four eye when they move the fronts around. But where do you see him making the biggest impact on this team?
That's a great question. I mean, there's kind of a lot of those round two, round three techs that are out there. You just kind of throw them all out there and see which one sticks, man. I don't really know how else to say it, man. I'm so confused with what their vision is at defensive tackle. You have Neville Gallimore. You have Tristan Hill. You have Carlos Watkins, Osa. You have Quentin Bahana now as well. You have Brent Urban. Like, there's so many guys at this point. I think you just throw them all in the pot and, you know, pick out which one gets done the best. I don't know what to expect. I don't know. Maybe he'll, because he is a little bit smaller. He is kind of that tweener. Maybe they use him as a four eye when they do odd fronts. I mean, that's a position I could see him playing as well. So maybe they have a specific role that they want to use for him.
And the bad thing with him is, and like I said, it's not even him, it's just what the roster is already constructed as. It's like, if like he was this absolutely dominant run defender, which I think he's a good run defender, but I don't think he's an elite run defender, and then I don't think he's an elite pass rusher, so it's kind of like he doesn't have that one elite trait or elite style of play that you can plug him in on running downs and be like, oh, he's going to be a stud there. Or plug him in on passing downs and be like, oh, he's going to rush the passer. So it's like, I feel like he's kind of what they have already. And that was my biggest issue with that one. But Cole, I wanted to ask you with Golston. Like, I see Golston as being like the value brand Tyrone Crawford replacement, like that style of player who's going to play left end, three technique, maybe play some right end for you on running downs. But like, where do you kind of see Golston fitting in? And can you see a scenario where he puts, you know, a Bradley and I or Dorrance Armstrong on the street?
I think he definitely puts, I think I can see him putting Armstrong's job in jeopardy just because of the numbers. If they do decide to go long at a receiver or a corner, I mean, somebody's going to be off the roster. Like you said, Golston kind of offers you some flexibility and versatility along the defensive line. He can play multiple positions. He can play end. He can play a little bit of inside. He's got the motor that a lot of people really rave about. He's always given high effort, which I think the coaches probably fell in love with, and which is why he was drafted where they drafted him, if I had to guess. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be obviously a sack master or anything like that. But he is a guy that can play the run. He's going to give you a lot of quality snaps, I think. And I think Dorrance Armstrong is probably in a little bit bigger jeopardy than Bradley Anae, in my personal opinion. I think Anae is a guy that they still have some hope for, even though he didn't really get much play last year. I don't think they want to part ways with him after one season. Whereas Armstrong, it's not that he's been a disappointing player or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but he's also not an irreplaceable player either, if that kind of makes sense. So I think Golston can slide in at one of those roles and push Dorrance Armstrong off the 53.
Yeah, we're actually going to skip over Bohanna because he kind of already did what we talked about. He put Antoine Woods on the street, which I didn't love, but I think he kind of already took over what we were going to discuss with him. But let's talk about Simi Fehoko, and then we'll talk about Izzy, and we'll probably stop there because I don't think the Nebraska cat is he just doesn't have a chance to really make the roster. So let's talk about Simi Fehoko and Izzy Mukwamu out of South Carolina. Dalton, I'll let you hit on Izzy, and then Cole, I'll let you hit on Simi, kind of what you think their chances are coming into camp, you know, who they could put on the street. Do they have a chance to make the roster?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that, you know, Izzy's he's a backup safety at this point, right. Or I guess a developmental safety is probably the better way to say it. I think that with him and with his ability or I guess his how do I say it?
Versatility?
No, I wasn't even talking about versatility. His experience. That's the word I was thinking of. You know, a third grade word there that I couldn't think of. No, his experience at corner is nice, and I liked the way that he played at safety. Now, obviously, we can all look at the couple of reps or that one rep on the red zone against Kyle Pitts and say, well, oh, that's a tough little rep there. He got put in the blender. But he's a really, really long player, and this team, this coaching staff really, really loves their long players, especially in the secondary. So I think he's going to get every chance to succeed, and I think that he is a good enough athlete. I mean, where you don't really have to be that twitchy or that fast overall to be successful at safety. You just kind of got to be in the right place at the right time. As long as you are, I think that.
I don't know.
Everybody mute your mics.
I think it was you, Dalton.
I'm not muted, so it
Cole,
wasn't
me. You.
Right.
What happened?
Your mic sounds horrible.
Very fuzzy. We're getting a ton of feedback from it. That was. Anyways, Izzy. I mean, I think he's just kind of in that developmental role. I think he'll end up, you know, being a little bit like Reggie was last year. And I don't know what their plan is at safety, man. I have no idea because Reggie Robinson, is he going to start at a position that he never played before?
That's what it sounds like.
That's kind of what it sounds like. I'm terrified of that. And then, you know, when Demonte ends up eventually being healthy, then you insert him in there most likely, as long as the Achilles injury didn't completely snap his athleticism. I mean, I just another year of kind of not caring about the safety position is not something that I wanted to go into 2021 like.
I mean, Steven can joke about it. So can we. It's all right. All right, Cole, let's see if you sound better. What do you think of Simi, and who's he putting on the street?
Yeah, are y'all hearing any more feedback? I moved my mic, so
you sound golden now.
All right, cool. Yeah, I think Simi definitely has a chance to make this roster. Just for the fact four or 6'4" guys with the run 4.4s don't necessarily grow on trees, you know. I mean, they spent a fifth round pick. A lot of people had him a little bit higher than that, potentially day three, third round, fourth round, you know. And I think he's a guy that can push a Noah Brown or Cedric Wilson, at least give them some competition in camp. I personally think Cedric Wilson does make the roster. I think Noah Brown is a little bit more in jeopardy. But I do think Simi does have a role. He's not the best route runner. He kind of fights the ball from time to time with the football. But, he can provide some stuff in on special teams. He's, like I said, he's very fast. He's got the size. I think he offers some deep threat ability that this team's probably looking for, another aspect to go with their offense. I do think he has a great chance of making the 53-man roster.
I agree with everything you guys said, so I'm not going to waste any more time saying it again. Bohanna's obviously on this roster. I'm interested to see him and Urban kind of split the roles. I guess it nose tackle, because those are your really only options there. But our boy Matt Farniak out of Nebraska, I don't know if he's got a real shot with as deep as this, unless he really pushes Terrence Steele or Brandon Knight or Connor McGovern or something. I don't know. I don't think he has a real good shot at doing much at all, maybe being a practice squad guy in year one and working his way onto something in year two. But that's all the time we got for today. We got a really special guest coming up next week on the show, so make sure you tune in next week. If you're a fan of Cowboys, Texas, country music, rock and roll, so make sure you tune in next week, because we're going to have a fun conversation with a really cool guest. So we enjoy everybody listening. This will be our last kind of draft-related podcast. We'll be back to talking the star next week, and we'll have a good special guest on to kick it off. So thank you guys for listening. Make sure you give a good review, give 5-star rating, leave a comment of who your favorite draft pick was. Let us know we're doing all right so we can keep coming back and doing it again. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We are talking the draft/star.